So that's why he played like Nikima and Zoraida with stuff to try to prove me that Nephilims are strong enough to control Jimmy. And I swiped him over the table.
Boy, we have a unique episode today. I'm talking to the three gentlemen that podium at this year's Russian Nationals. We have a great discussion on how they use terrain and how they look at crew building. We also compare how Russia metas differ from each other and how they differ from the metas that they hear about in the US or even in the UK. It's really fascinating to hear how our brothers in Russia look at the game because it is slightly different than what you hear normally here on the podcast. We find out that tabletop gaming is a thing even in Siberia. I will tell you that their English is excellent, but at times their accents can be a challenge. They take a little getting used to, but stick through it because what they share is worth the listen. One note, you'll hear us talk about Gaining Grounds. This was recorded before the Gaining Grounds Season 0 came out. Last but not least, stick towards the end. Their perspective on hiring masters is really noteworthy. Enjoy.
Playing a tabletop strategy game allows you to unplug and test your skills against friends. Every week, Third Floor Wars delivers useful strategies, discussions, battle reports, and reviews to tabletop games like Malifaux. If you want to get better at the games you already play, or discover the games other people are playing, you are in the right place. Craig and Ray welcome you to the Third Floor and the Tabletop Talk Broadcast.
Craig here on the Third Floor. Today we're talking with the three people that filled the podium at the Russian Nationals Grand Tournament in St. Petersburg, Russia. My guests are Nikolay Galiev, winner of the event with Neverborn. In fact, not just Neverborn, but Solo Dreamer. Chris Govyazin, who got second place with Arcanus. And then Dmitry Kavorkov, who got third place with Outcast. So Dmitry, welcome to the Third Floor.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
So Dmitry, the first thing I want to know is how did you get into tabletop wargaming?
Well, I think we all used to play toy soldiers and other games like this in childhood, and I always liked RPGs, strategies, and I knew about war games during my school days, but they weren't popular here. I played Warhammer or Mordheim maybe once when my friend had a few miniatures, and only a few years ago when I had free time and money and some will to do it, I decided to finally start collecting my first army and played Warhammer for a few years. And then I found out that there is such game as Malifaux, and then I just took the train to this city, and I'm still here.
So what was it, Dmitry, about Malifaux that made you want to play it?
Well, first of all, you know, in Warhammer, you buy boxes that are called start collecting, not start playing. And in Malifaux,
right.
And in Malifaux, you buy one box and you're ready to play. That was the first. So it was skirmish game. It was something new and interesting for me. And I like the game lore. I like the setting. It has a lot of unique and not unique things that just close to me, like steampunk, Western, Lovecraft. And it's a good mix. And
yeah, to your point, Dmitry, the fact that it doesn't cost a ton of money as compared to other games, I think is very, very helpful. And I'm with you on the background and the lore. It's definitely not fully original, but it's definitely unique.
Yeah, it's unique. And, you know, sometimes tropes and cliché work, because if they didn't work, there would be no such tropes or clichés. And this is a character-driven story. And they make very good characters. And things that I like that, for example, there was a Division Pass campaign, which was my first global campaign in Mali 4. When I understood that I can straightforwardly control the storyline, that I can affect it. And, for example, now when I look at Marlena Webster miniature, I know that I took part in creating this miniature because I took part.
Yeah, I think that that I hope they do that again soon, yeah. Because I agree with you that the ability for us to log games in this type of world and know that the results of these games could eventually create a character like Marlena Webster, I think is very neat. So that's exciting, Dimitri. That's exciting. So, Chris, welcome to the third floor. I want to hear how you found Wargaming.
Hello, Craig. Hello, everyone. So, of course, I've started Wargaming, playing Warhammer 4000, and my favorite army was Space Wolves, and they are, actually. I spent, like, quite time to collect a huge army. And then one of my partners for playing, he was playing Orcs. He also played Malifaux at that time. And he decided that he needs someone to represent a new game for the... it was some event in Moscow at that time, some kind of company for Malifaux. And he invited me and showed me the Rider versus Athelia. So I was playing Athelia, and he played the Rider. And I liked very much that it uses not dice, in which I'm awful. if you want me to roll three or five zeros, I will do it. That's okay. And here I found that the poker deck is a nice randomizer. So then I started playing, and it was a very funny story how I choose my first master, since I've asked in few shops in Moscow which one master is nice to start in different faction. I decided that I will play for the guild. And nice. They just told me that there is a new master. Nobody knows how to play it, etc. So it was Nelly Cochrane.
Wow, that's a hard first master to learn.
It's nice. I was like, I was on the bottom for like half of the year. The first half of the year, I started playing. Yeah. So every single tournament, I had like the lowest one or a bit higher place. Yeah. And that was just a challenge for me to stop it or to continue mastering Nelly.
Well, so, but Nelly was one of the strongest masters in second edition. So I'm going to assume that once you got better, you started winning because she was good in second edition.
Yeah, but still, you know, to my mind, you can play Nelly good. But first of all, you need to play like 50 games with it.
I agree.
And then everything should be okay. So we were just trying some, I don't know how to call it, but I just give my roster, full my roster, which I was winning with in different events, to another player. Even if he knows how to play it, I took another any master, and I knew how to break that roster totally.
Right.
So that was the funny story for me. And it was nice.
Now, Chris, I see in the tournament you played Arcanus. And Chris, I don't know if you listen to the podcast or not, but one of the things that people that listen to the podcast find out quickly is that I have a very illogical, unreasonable, and emotional hatred for Arcanus. So I need to know, how did you leave the guild and end up with Arcanus?
Actually, we have a joke here that I haven't left the guild. We just have a new department. So, actually, I'm not fond of the background of Arcanists. I don't think that they are not close to me. That's
yeah,
perfectly it describes actually what I mean. But I like guild very much. But when I started mastering third edition, I actually understood that I still think as I was playing in second edition. I can't right. change my mind. That's why I need a different faction to play in third edition.
Chris, I think that was a good move, and it's something that I've seen a lot of people doing, and I don't think it's I think it's smart to do that because it's really a new game now, and all the different models play differently, and I think it can be hard to stay with the same faction and masters as you transition over. So I think a lot of people are doing the same thing you did, and I don't think that that's a bad move. So that's very cool. So Nikolai, welcome to the third floor. Now let's hear how you found Wargaming and how you found Malifaux.
Hello, everyone. Am I Mick working? Oh, yeah, sure. So I was born in not in Moscow. I was living in Siberia in not that big town. And the only one wargame that was actually spread there was Warhammer. So I started as our guys with Warhammer 40K. My favorite army was the Chaos Space Marines. I still totally love them, but I don't really love the gaming system that represented now. But then I tried some different formats like Kill Team. I found that I get much more fun playing little teams or miniatures that can have some specialization. So I'm looked down as skirmish. And then I found Malifaux. In my hometown, no one was playing it at all. So I just looked from miniatures and thinking of what they represented and learned about them. Then I got my first box. It was Dreamer. And I totally like it and because it became so powerful and interesting to play now. It was pretty good in second edition, but I was not good then. So I got my first box, painted it, and got a few players in hometown. Then I started to get out to the our city. It's about 4 hours, right? To play some tournaments, and I was always a sucker. And that's a funny story, yeah. Then I changed my city to Moscow and started playing here. In Moscow, there are really a lot of strong competitive players that played the second edition like for years, and so I wasn't about winning anything. For example, on the last national tournament that was in Moscow, I got last place or something. But,
wow!
But it was a really good experience because there were 50 players last year, and there are really interesting opponents that I met there. And I learned a lot. So that's what's Malifaux for me in second edition.
Well, Nikolai, that's a heck of a comeback story from you to go 1 year in last place and the next year to win the whole thing. So congratulations on that. Now, Nikolai, you mentioned, you moved from Siberia over to Moscow and you really were able to find a lot more players in Moscow. And Chris, I know that you've traveled a good bit. You've even played in the UK Nationals. So, Chris, can you kind of give me an idea of what the Malifaux scene is like there in Russia? It sounds like that there's a decent community there in Moscow, and I'll assume there is a decent community in St. Petersburg because that's where the tournament was held. Is it a bunch of small pockets of people playing Malifaux, or are you guys traveling a lot to play each other?
Last year in second edition, we traveled a lot in Russia as well. We had a huge tournament with more than 40 players, as far as I remember, in Grodno. It's in Belarus. A lot of people from Russia and from the Ukraine and from Belarus was there. So it was really good experience for me. We have a lot of tournaments. We had a lot of tournaments in the second edition. I hope we will have the same amount for third edition this year. In Moscow, we had like a tournament every 2 weeks or so.
Wow.
But not huge. So it's about 10, 15 people, but in different places we had different tournaments. We went to Vladimir. It's about 200 kilometers from Moscow, with three of us actually from Moscow. And we played with people there. We played in Voronezh, and etc. So we had traveled in Moscow, in Russia, but not far away from Moscow. The UK Nationals. So actually, I have to add that we have different Malifaux. So I've played with people from different towns. We have different Malifaux in Russia, in Ukraine, in Belarus. I can't really explain what is the difference, but still, just maybe people play different.
So when you say different, Chris, are you saying they're still playing by the same rules, but maybe the style of play is a little different?
Yeah, of course. It's all about style, about strategy, about movement, etc. So you will never see the same combination in Malifaux for different people, because everyone has his own favorite models, his own favorite static tactics, something like this. So you just prefer to use several models in some order. So you use them for different to get different targets in game. So yep. You need to play for example, if you want to place as hem marker, you keep your favorite hem runner for this, and so on. So and only you will use it like this.
Right. So it sounds like people definitely in different groups that they have attachments to different models that they love and that they use all the time. So I would assume that when you're traveling and to going to visit each other, it's a bit of clash of styles. Is that what you've noticed as well, Nikolai?
No, I wanted to notice that the one difference that I met around the country, it's tables and terrain. So, for example, if we look at Siberia metagame, then people really love complex buildings. There are like two or three floors buildings that can be unmade, and there are a lot of fights inside of it. in St. Petersburg, there are a lot of really good thematic but really weird tables, like a cove
cave.
Or a cave or Venezia. So and it's make meta game too really different and it's interesting. Some models that play on simple tables just don't get around to this.
Oh, for sure. And, that happens in the U.S. as well. You'll notice as you travel around in the U.S. and play in different metas the common terrain setups are a little bit different. And to your point, Nicolay, it has a huge impact on the game, the different styles of terrain. And it also has a huge influence on the different models that you tend to hire, because different abilities like incorporeal and things like that have a bigger influence on those complicated boards with lots of terrain versus shooting crews that shoot a lot would like, boards that are a little bit more open with less blocking terrain. Now, Dimitri, when you, get on Facebook and on the forums and things like that, and you look at, how the game is talked about in here in the U.S. or over in the United Kingdom, do you notice anything to be very different from how it's played here in the West versus how you guys are playing it in Russia?
Yes, actually, we saw a lot of differences in mind style during beta test, third edition beta test, because we reacted differently. Usually, we tried to break everything into small details, find every loophole, find every broken combinations, and we did good and often. And for example, I posted if you take this model and that model, you can get this. And for example, you can get a dozen obey actions per turn. You can bury the entire opponent's crew. And it was kind of obvious for us because we looked at it as mechanic, as QA. But some other players from other countries, they just said, no, it's all right. It's not automatic. You need to flip a card. And it was strange for us because, we are testing the rules. It's a mechanics of the game. And if we don't have good mechanics, the game will be bad. You cannot just say, it's all right, we love the game. We can play it even with raw mechanics.
Wow, Dimitri, I did not realize that. And I am very thankful that you guys had that approach in the beta, because I tend to lean more towards your attitude towards that, which is it might be, if something is possible that is completely out of control, even if it's hard to do, if you have to flip a bunch of cards, that means it needs to be looked at. So I am very thankful that you guys were involved with that.
You're welcome.
Chris or Nick, thank you. Now, Chris and Nicolay, did either of you guys participate in the beta?
Yeah, I did.
And what was your experience, Chris?
Actually, I was a bit upset when to my mind, they broke Nell a bit, but it's only my opinion. And we have a really perfect player for the guild. It's Yershov Dmitry. He has actually played a lot, even in third edition. And he does really well in Mastering Guild. And he actually found how to use Nelly perfectly for Simran. She's she does very well in Simraning. But it's not what I actually liked her for. I liked her for replacing models on the table from this part of the table to that part of the table and then do some crazy things. So
yeah.
That's why I'm playing. My favorite master today is Colette, and she does the same things.
She does have a little bit of that feeling of Nelly in second edition. That's a really good point. And yeah, it was a little odd in beta that they made a really drastic last minute change to Nelly. So if you go back and look at the history of Nelly in beta, I would say 80% of the time they were kind of working on this kind of one way that she would play. And then really in the last week or two almost of beta is when she made major changes. Well, guys, that's very, very helpful as far as, you know, all many of the listeners, like I said, are over here in the UK and the US. And to kind of hear your perspective, I think, is helpful. But what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. And when we get back from the break, we're going to talk about the actual Russian Grand Tournament. There were six rounds. We've got the three best players from all six of those rounds. So we're going to learn what they played, what they focused, and what they learned. So we'll be right back.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I'll tell you, it's I'm amazed when I travel across the United States and get a chance to interact with different metas, you know, kind of how the perspectives are in the game can be different and different perceptions on power levels and play styles and how terrain is put together. One of the reasons that I wanted to get these gentlemen on the podcast is because if it's different when I go from, say, North Carolina to California, I would imagine it's very different going from the US to Russia. And I think that in that first segment, we learned a lot about how things, even though they're playing the same game with the same rules, there's really a different way to look at it. To hear that there's some good cross meta play between the different parts of Russia, I think is excellent. So Dmitry, you finished third in the event, and just so everybody knows, the event was six rounds and they had 29 people total play. And, Dmitry, you finished third, you were playing Outcasts. Can you kind of give me a breakdown over the six rounds, what, masters you brought?
So I tried to play as diverse as possible. But I looked at the game pool. So I played in this order. I played Wix, I played Zip, I played Parker, Leviticus, Von Schill, and Leviticus again. So altogether, five masters.
Those are, I tell you, Outcasts, I think, in third edition have just a strong stable of masters. Now, I noticed you didn't play Tara. Is that because you don't like her? Or you don't have her ready?
There was a problem because there are a few models that haven't been released yet, like Void Hunter or Scavenger. And this tournament said that you cannot use them because they aren't released. And Void Hunters are very critical for Tara in the current edition.
Yeah.
Also,
not having access to Void Hunters makes Tara tough. Yeah.
And also, there was funny thing because I felt like Von Schill himself because I gave my models to other Outcast players. So I did load up, you take this, and you play. And like every round, someone asked me to give him a miniature or two. And for example, in the first round, I gave my entire Tara crew to other Outcast player. because there was exception, there was a challenge between two players, and one player was allowed to play the Savage crew, which is unreleased yet. Also, he has already ordered it from GenCon, and the Outcast player was allowed to play with Void Hunters. So this was an exceptional game.
I just recently had a chance to play against Euripides and that keyword, and it's very different and unique. But I like that they kind of had a gentleman's agreement that they both could use unreleased models. What were the for you? What were kind of the biggest things, Dimitri, that you learned from the event? So after playing six games of Malifaux, a very competitive environment, what do you think were your big learnings?
Well, I learned to always keep one last card on hand because in two games, nearly in two games in a row, I lost because I used my last card for nothing. And just for next activation, I needed this exact card critically. And funny thing that both times it was the same card. So I learned my lessons very slowly.
Yeah, hand management is something that I'm still working on as well. It's a big part of it. And it is so hard when you know you can cheat to not cheat and to keep that card and let something through, because either you know you need that card for something you need, or you might need it defensively to protect yourself. So you've got a pretty good range of masters that you use, Dimitri. And I get a sense that you have been playing with Tara, but even though you didn't use her in the tournament, I'd like to know what you consider to be the most competitive, or maybe even just your favorites in Outcast right now.
Well, we don't have weak masters, as I think. They are all very different, and I think that's both the forte and weakness of our faction. Because from the start, each Outcast master had its own unique mechanic, playstyle, and all the models are different. There are very few double keyword models in our faction.
Right.
And for example, some factions like Neverborn, they can play several masters, so they can take dual keyword models, but we tend to take one master. Well, at least it's my playstyle. I know that there are people who take several masters. I know that we can play five masters if we have weak as leaders, etc., etc. But for our faction, it's usually mono master. Maybe you can take, for example, Honshil or Leviticus as second master, or Parker, but maybe it doesn't suit me yet.
So you have not been hiring masters?
This tournament, no. I played only mono masters all the rounds.
And of all the games, of all six rounds, Dimitri, what was the matchup that was the biggest challenge?
Well, I think the last one, which I lost, it was against Chris. Because he played masters which I hadn't yet battled against. He took Kaeris and Sandeep.
Ah.
Yes, and it was the last play of the tournament. We took a time. I don't think we played a lot, like half the game. But yes, it was something new for me. And of course, as I said, I lost the game mostly due to the unlearned lesson about not using this card for nothing. This last card. Because I could.
Yeah, it's yeah, and I gotta tell you, I've seen Karis crew that hires Sandeep, and there's some nice synergies there. So if you're not familiar with either of those masters, or those masters working together, that can be a huge, huge challenge. But congratulations. Third place with a field that big is very impressive, Dimitri. And speaking of Chris, so Chris, you finished second with Arcanist. Over the six rounds, what masters did you bring?
Actually, I prefer to play double masters. So I had on the first tour, I had Colette and Hoffman. Then, which I was played a lot. On the second, it was Kairos and Sandeep. On the third one, it was Sandeep and Colette. on the 4th Kaerish and Kalat, on the 5th Kalat and Hoffman again, and the last one was Kaerish and Sandeep.
That's interesting. So you hired a second master in all 6 rounds.
Yep.
And is that just something that you like to do, or do you think that that makes you more competitive?
I think that actually in Arcanists, I need those masters because, you know, for example, I have a weird, maybe weird roster for Kalat because I just looked at the models and decided that this roster will work with Hoffman good, and actually it does. So Kaerish and Sandeep are good because you have a summoner, mm-hmm. and for some scam pool you need a summoner actually, because Sandeep can summon cheap models which can do a lot of mess for the opponent. For example, in the second play, all the golems were, for 2 rounds, all the golems were working just to hit Jackdaw 1 damage each.
Yep.
So it was like three elementals were hitting again and again and again and again. So the opponent had no stones, no, and nothing to heal the Jackdaw.
That's exactly how you kill Jackdaw. Is you kill Jackdaw not with one big hit, but with a lot of little hits.
So you know, it's like tons of one damage.
Yep,
and that's okay. But in the as for me, especially for Arcanists, double masters are nice because. There are not a lot of universal models in Arcanists. So that's why you need, for example, Hoffman is perfect to heal and to boost constructs. And also he can dispel. That's awesome. So this model does everything for his 16 stones as a second master. And Kalat has a perfect model like Corifee Duet. So
yeah, and I've got to say, I mean, I've heard and seen, you know, Kalat hired as a second master and Sandeep hired as a second master. But Chris, I think there's a lot of people listening right now that are very surprised that you hired Hoffman as a second master, because I don't know if I've heard that come across. But your explanation as far as him being a superior healer for constructs, if your keyword that you're hiring into, the leader keyword, has a lot of constructs, which Karis does, and they're important constructs, that I could see where Hoffman would have a place. So out of curiosity, Chris, over the 6 rounds, what did you consider the toughest matchup?
Actually, there were 2 really hard matches for me. One which I lost. It was against Ivan Kopolov. He was playing. He had mono. Just a second. The Woodman. Actually. Yeah, Kalodi. He had mono Kalodi, and I had Kairos and Kalat. And we had like Reckoning. So it was really hard for me, and I made several mistakes. And it was 2 points difference between us. So the last one, of course, against Dmitry. So we were actually really tired. And the game was slow and tough because it's really hard to play 2 days in a row with so much pressure. Actually, yeah. Pressure. In Russia,
playing six rounds of Malifaux, Chris, is brutal. It, it's so exhausting. Every time I play in a five-round tournament, by that fifth round, my brain is finished. And then you guys play another round after that. So that's amazing. So obviously, you mentioned Collodi was one of your tough matchups. So you guys, for this tournament, you allowed Dead Man's Hand, then, I assume.
Yes, we had, there was a restriction that allows you to use Dead Man's Hand, but you can't recruit one more master to Dead Man's Hand, and you can't add models from Dead Man's Hand to a roster where you have a non-Dead Man's Hand master.
That makes sense. Now, Chris, Dimitri talked about, you know, in Outcasts, how he feels that the styles of the different masters are so unique that it was very hard for him to say one was more powerful or better than the other because they all have their different roles. How about an Arcanist? Are you finding an Arcanist that there's certain masters and keywords that you think are above the curve and stronger than others? Or are they like what Dimitri talked about in Outcasts where, you know, you have a master and each of those keywords are for different roles and different strategies?
Actually, I have not that much experience today to say that we have in Arcanists one really competitive master and the other one is not that good. But still, I have not played Rasputina a lot. So that's why I think she's not that powerful, maybe. So I need to think a lot about her. And actually, these masters, which I was playing, were the more played by me before. That's why I took them. So not to experiment a lot.
Yeah, I can tell you, Chris, that I've said this on the podcast a lot, which is familiarity and practice with a master is more important than, say, thinking it's more powerful than the other. Kind of like the experience that we talked about with Nelly, is that you have to get the games in order to get good, because there is no master or keyword in this game that you can just read a list on the internet and play it the next day and do well with it. The game is a lot more complicated than that.
I absolutely agree with you, and I'm a bit upset that nowadays it's hard to master one keyword, really. I don't think that in the guild or in Arcanist, I can name any master which I can just take this master and master it. For example, for 60, 70, 100 games, and I will know for sure that I will be a competitive player on any tournament.
Yeah, now, it takes practice, right?
Yeah, to my mind, in third edition, we need to practice more masters, more keywords to face any sample or strategy, because they are just different. That's a hard part, and maybe that's an interesting part. And
yeah, I think that's true, Chris. I mean, and part of that is because it's second edition, you might hire different masters, but you were hiring a similar crew, at least here in the West. You know, every Arcanist, hired the same three or four models, regardless of what their master was. Whereas in third edition, you know, because of the keyword system, you have a lot more models to learn within a faction. Do you agree?
Yeah. Actually, in Russia, we had almost the same crews, but we had core models. So if you play again, for example, if you play against a faction that has a lot of conditions, for example, in Outcasts, you will take
Johan,
yeah. And that was a core models. Now you need a core model in your keyword, right? And you need versatile models a lot, and of course you need another master in some regions. For example, when you scheme when you call your master first and then hire the crew changed a lot. You can't now. It's really hard to call your master and then try to combine a crew against the opponent's called master.
Right.
That's really hard. That's why you need another master, the second one.
So, Chris, in your mind, you're hiring a second master to directly counter the leader declared by your opponent?
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. Or to make the core leader more powerful.
Yep, that makes sense to me. So, Nikolai, let's talk about your big win. So, first of all, congratulations. The second thing is I went through and looked at the rounds and noticed that you soloed your favorite master. You played in all six rounds. It looked like you played Dreamer. Is that just because you didn't feel comfortable with some of the other masters, or you just love Dreamer so much? Why six rounds of Dreamer?
I can't really say that I was soloing it, because each game I got another master to hire. The Dreamer has a high flexibility, so he can summon new models, he can beat enemy really hard, and he can score like anything. And he costs much less than other masters, that's it's a nice addition to it. So my basic was that I had really... nice roster that I played a lot. It's like two Stitches Together, Serena Bowman, and Two Daydreams. In that, I add another master to counter my enemy or to score schemes. So I was pretty in control of situation most of times, and that's why I chose Dreamer every round. But before,
so Nikolai, do you remember what you did each round? Because I think people would love to hear what masters you hired with Dreamer. Do you remember?
At the Malifaux Nationals, I mostly hired Pandora and Nikima. Four times it was Nikima of these Inhuman Reflexes, and two times it was Pandora. The thing is that there are actually. Titania or Zoroida that can be easily added to this roster in case you need to counter something. But I don't really have much experience with Titania, and I don't really love to play Zoroida. So I focused on these two opportunities. Pandora is working really well to unbury your minions, and he has really much punishment for teams that got a lot of conditions on it. It also adds you some changes to counter your enemy than you know their master. And Nikima is just can take out enemy roster by herself. He is really powerful. But Dreamer can afford this our masters because he always has value. I summoned about two or three models each game, and it adds to my roster, basically, and allows me to do more things on the table, while my K models are pretty tough and can destroy enemy phase.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I have not had a chance to play against Dreamer, but we did put out a really good deep dive episode about Dreamer, so we got to learn a lot about her on the podcast. I have had a chance to play against Pandora, and boy, I could see her as a very good second master because she is brutal, and what she does with conditions I think is a big deal because there are so many more conditions being applied in third edition than I think what we saw previously. So, Nikolai, over the six rounds, was there one or two matchups or games that were really tough?
The thing is, I was always winning till round four. So, like every matchup, second was hard. First two gone pretty easily for me. But third matchup was versus Dmitry Yashov, a really good guild player. And I was afraid I may even lose it. But I managed to swipe him off the table, so I got my idols and stuff.
And what guild master did he bring?
He just like always on competitive tournaments bring Nelly and get another master with her like Sonya. It's a really powerful combination because he get these outstringers. The guys with the traps, I don't really know how.
Pathfinders.
Yeah.
And they summon this nasty stuff, and I sure kill it, and then I kill it, I gain destructed adversary and other stuff. So my Nikima was like five destructed and one moment. But I had Serena Bowman, so I can remove it.
Pretty. Ah, that helps. That definitely helps. So you playing against. Nelly was tough. Was there another one that was a challenge?
Another one was Dmitry Kivorkov, his Leviticus. I don't really know for now how to play against Leviticus properly. And if Dmitry were fast enough in his play style, he will ever win this matchup, I guess. But we played only four rounds full, so we got a draw. There were two interesting games after that. It's a game versus Ivan Kopylov, the top never born of the Russia and stuff. Not so much now. the thing is, he wanted to bring Everpit against me, but we have a talk with henchman and decided to ban this because the tournament rules prohibited it, actually. And I right. don't have much experience against Everpitus. That's why he played like Nikima and Zaraida with stuff to try to prove me that Nephilims are strong enough to counter Dreamer. And I swiped him over the table with nice score. Last game was pretty funny. It was versus Anton Maltsev. It's guild and outcast player that were playing like one game on Basse and our one on Lady Justice. And Lady Justice is really hard stuff, I guess.
Yes.
I don't really know what to do this here. I figured it out that I must kill all our models and Lady Justice let do their things because you can't kill her with her armor and soul stones. It's really a tough task.
It is very, very tough. And what's hard about playing against Lady Justice is, you know, your first instinct is to say, you know what, I can't kill her, so I'm just going to kind of let her do her thing. The challenge is that if you let her do her thing, she's deleting two or three models every turn. She is tough to play against. I agree.
Yeah, that's what happened. And at the end of the game, there was like Dreamer and someone Stitcher together and Justice and her Lone Marshal that do his job pushing idols. We played a draw. We almost played all games discording our objectives to each other. We don't really get a chance to make ours things. But I really think that if we were not so tired, Anton Maltsev had overhand on this and he can win. But he was tired, I was tired. It was a really fun meeting at the end of the tournament. And there was some funny mistakes made that we fixed fast. So it was really nice game and really hard. Oh yeah. And before this tournament even began, we had some fun challenge with Anton Maltsev that we will meet at the end game and we will wear masks during our last game.
Well, you're both playing Neverborn, so
it was really funny and weird looking stuff. So
that's funny.
I totally like it, and I don't even expected him to meet him there after he lost the first round. But after each turn, I go to his table and ask him, "Do we meet in the final?" And he said, "Yes,"
and he kept his promise.
Yeah, it was really cool to see him there. And
well, it sounds to me like that you really, not only did you win the event, but you had to do it by playing against one of the best players in Neverborn.
Yeah, sure. But I think I won not because I was skilled enough, but because my opponent was about to prove me something. So
I can see. Well, apparently he proved that he can't beat you. Is the only thing that he proved.
No. Antipov is a really good player. I think he is switching to Arcanist now.
Oh boy, that doesn't make me happy. All right, guys. Well, that was sounds like an amazing event. And for with an edition just coming out, for you guys to have 29 players, I think is fascinating. What we're going to do is take another break. And when we get back from this break, I'm going to talk to these gentlemen a little bit more about what Malifaux in Russia looks and feels like. One of the things that I found fascinating is wait till you hear the breakdown of factions of these 29 players. We'll be right back. Howdy friends, Craig here. With 3rd edition Malifaux released, it's time for you to get a new mat with new deployment zones. We've tried every mat in the business, and nobody has better quality and selection than Mats by Mars. They're waterproof and they roll and unroll easily, and they're even wet erase Marco compatible. They offer over 35 designs and let you add M3E overlays for making deployment and positioning a breeze. Check them out at matsbymars.com. They are offering a sweet discount for our listeners. After you found the perfect mat, use the promo code 3rdfloor to get 10% off your entire order. If you really want to support us, in the notes of your order, request that our logo be put in the corner of your mat. It's the only way to make the best mat in the business even cooler. Again, that's Mat by Mars. Use the promo code 3rdfloor to get a 10% discount. Details are in the show notes. So how much are 3 or 4 of these episodes worth to you a month? 3rd Floor Wars has a Patreon, and if you think they're worth $1, $5, $20 a month, swing by and become a patron. We have polls that decide the next episode of the pod, along with early releases of articles and podcasts. Everything we release goes out to everyone, but sometimes our patrons get a head start. The link is in the show notes, or just search for 3rd Floor Wars on Patreon.com. Thanks for the support. So I want to give a quick shout out to our top patrons as of the time of this recording. A big thanks to Nick Westbrook, Colin, Stephen Morris, Kevin Smith, Sam Newman, and Jeremy Peace. We appreciate everybody's support. So it's really neat to hear, just how exciting that event must have been for all three of them, and to hear what some of those tough matchups were. I think one of the biggest things that I found interesting is that 2 out of the 3 people in the podium all hired a second Masters. And, we've spent so much time talking to people from the U.S. and the United Kingdom here on the podcast, and we don't hear a lot about hiring Masters. And to hear that... our Russian friends are seem to be doing it a lot more maybe than we are and having good success with it. But the one thing that really surprised me when I looked at really kind of the breakdown of those 29 players is how really evenly spread the representation was for the different factions. And the two factions with the least representation are not lightly represented here in the West. So here was the breakdown. You had 6 Outcast players, 6 Bayou players, 4 Guild players, 4 Ten Thunder players, 4 Neverborn players, 3 Arcanists, and 3 Resurrectionists. And the first thing that's surprising to me is, one, to see so many Bayou players. Chris, has that always been the case where you've had a lot of people playing Gremlins and Bayou?
Yeah, we have a lot of people playing Gremlins, and to my mind, it's something in our community, because we have several players for Gremlins who actually push their faction, who actually has their radio bayou. Yeah, and they have some resource where they discuss their strategies, where they help to newbies, and actually they teach their players. That's why they play good.
So it's almost like a mini community, and they're kind of fostering new people. That's pretty neat. And then the other thing that surprised me is one, Guild is not nearly as popular here in the UK and in the US as we see there. As you know, you had 4 Guild players, but two factions that are very popular, or more popular than it was represented in this tournament, are Arcanists and Resurrectionists. Now, is that true in general there in Russia, that you don't have a lot of Arcanist and Resurrectionist players? Was it just a little bit of an anomaly in this event?
No, we had in second edition, we had not that much Arcanist players on the tournaments represented. We have several good players, good competitive players who actually took high places and who mastered a lot of their factions. For resurrectionists, it's really not the common thing, because we had quite a lot of resurrectionists in second edition, but now most of them are not played a lot in third edition, and to my mind, we had not that much beta testers for resurrectionists in Russia.
Gotcha. Now, Dmitry, looking across at kind of the different people that play in your area, is there a faction that your meta considers to be kind of a dominating faction or a very powerful faction? Or are you finding things pretty balanced over there faction to faction?
It's never balanced. Actually, we pronounce it a little different, but I'm not sure I can pronounce it here in the podcast. But it's rhyming, because yeah, I think you got it. And because initially there was Dead Man's Hand, and they said it will be a completely different faction. But sometime, just in the middle of that, they said, okay, they are still their own faction, so you can take these two dead masters back into Neverborn. And of course it gave a lot of new combinations, like you can take Kalodi, Zaraida, Lucius and control just everything around the room, or you can take both Nephilim sisters, etc., etc. And this disbalance for not only Neverborn, but especially for them, because for example, Nicodem and Tramos don't have such synergy maybe with the rest. Well, I mean, what I mean is that they are on their own, so they have the same role they had maybe in second edition, like faction leaders. So, for example, even before becoming Resurrectionist again or Arcanist again, they could take their minions with them. And there was some inlaid synergy, so it was tested, like how Ramos plays with Arcanist, how Nicodem plays with zombies and other actionists. But Kalodi and Lilith, they were separated mostly, and there was synergy with their own gang, with their own crew, and it wasn't tested with the rest, with versatile models, with other crews of the same faction. And because this faction now has 10 masters, of course it has some advantage. And of course many people are afraid of Zaraida because of these control mechanics. Sometimes Stitched Together were considered very dangerous because they have tactical action that kills you and it just ignores everything because of tactical action, so an attack. But from time to time, we find it maybe easier to counteract it because we learn, we see it more and more. There's less fear, there's more knowledge, there's more experience. How to contract different factions. And I think the problem is that some factions, they're not well represented. For example, as Chris said, we have very few resurrectionists and we almost don't have 10 Thunders. So there's not much to say about them. usually. And even also this tournament had a lot of outcast players. I still see that most of my opponents didn't know what to see from this faction. So they don't play often against.
Gotcha. Yeah. So you get a sense that maybe the outcasts are not a real common opponent for a lot of the players. Gotcha. Nikolai, you had a reaction to what Dimitri was saying about Ramos and Nicodem. What are your thoughts?
So maybe Dimitri never played against Ramos, but Ramos is broken as fuck.
I mean that he was tested with these models. Even.
I'm not sure if he was tested at all, because he can have three versatile masters. And by the way, he can make six damage that don't need any flips other than simple drill, like four or five and one tome here.
And Ramos is very good. And
for two pulse. So he just destroying everything. It's totally fun to play against him.
Well, this leads me to my next question, because I can tell you here in the West, we're not seeing a whole lot of people play Dead Man's Hand. So, Nikolai, do you see a lot of Dead Man's Hand, not just in events, but when you're playing, with your local group?
Not really. As I said to you earlier, I think that Moscow community is very competitive. And nowadays, most of our tournaments is restricted or banned Dead Man's Hand. There are some enthusiasts that play these masters, like Ivan Kopylov, but they are not so much interesting in the models that are gone for the game. So I guess Dead Man's Hand is pretty funny stuff for us, but I don't think it's balanced any good. Kalodi is too strong. Lilith, this synergy, this Nikima and the stuff is really strong. But Ramos is...
We know how you feel about Ramos. You made that pretty clear.
He was very sneaky in the beta. Nobody won.
I'm not sure that we could do better, but we don't have much Resurrections player that played long enough with him in third edition to see it.
Excuse me, I need to add something. Actually, to my mind, the representation of Neverborn on our first places is again because of people. We have several Neverborn players who actually dig the rules, dig cards, and they really invent crazy combinations. And to my mind, it's the only way to win in Malifaux, to surprise your opponent, to find some crazy combinations, and through it you can actually do your game. So you can play any schemes, any strategies, etc. So, and to counter schemes and strategies of your opponent. And those people actually invented that crazy thing with Ramos. So Ramos, Hoffman, etc. So you can just come with one model and do about 12 damage without any flip.
That sounds terrible. And really, Chris, it leads me to kind of my next question for you. Having played third edition through the beta and now through release and having a chance to play in events like the Nationals, are there any models out there that you think are a problem and might need to be looked at by Weird as needing some changes in the next update?
I actually, when I play, I see a lot of things that I want that I don't want to see on the table. And when, for example, Stitch Togethers, etc. But when you play a lot, you you start think that it's normal. Actually, yeah. You have stitch together on the table. Okay, you need to do something with them, and you just know what to expect.
Yeah, and this ties to what you already said, Chris, which is, you know, the first time you see stuff, that familiarity, it can be very damaging and hard to deal with. But I've said it on the podcast a few times that the second time you play against it, the third time you play against it, you learn and you get a little bit better and you know how to handle it. So I don't disagree with you at all, sir.
Yeah, and it was actually in the second edition as well. Yep. When I had to add something about UK Nationals, actually, thanks a lot to those to David, who actually does this event every year.
David's and, a great guy.
Yeah, it's awesome event. It's a lot of people there, and different tables, and a lot of people from all over the world and from Europe. Lots of people from Europe. It was great experience for me. And even on the tournament, I had several times when people just tell me, you know, you could play this, your model's ability like this, which I never knew, actually. For example, it was for Master Quick when his willpower plus flip, yep. Which was added to Nelly's insight, for example.
Yep.
So I never knew it. Thanks to guys who taught me. Actually, that's interesting.
Yeah. No, you learn. I agree, Chris. When you play with a completely different group of people, you always seem to learn new things. How about you, Dimitri? Dimitri, do you think that there's models out there right now that really didn't get tested enough and you think Weird might need to look at in the next update?
I see that there are some models who are supposed to be good, but they aren't used at all. For example, mm-hmm. there is a guy named Bishop, which, if you look at it, well, he has good stats. He has a lot of cool abilities, but he has some drawbacks that just makes him useless. And there is a lot of competition, yep. in faction and in the crew. And when you can just check all the models with the same cost or circa same cost, you say, okay, guy, I'm sorry, but you're not going to the field today because I take this guy. He costs the same, but he's better, or he's more expensive, but he's still better.
Yeah, you don't see Bishop played a lot here either.
Absolutely. And I know that the logic behind this model that he cannot be less expensive with these abilities, with these stats, but the combination of these stats isn't good enough.
Yeah.
Because for all the good he has, he has something bad. And, of course, there are models who are not seen through yet, because, for example, when I first looked at you, I thought, well, he's worse. He's worse than in the last edition. But only recently I understood how good he is, because his new Man in Black aura is so unique it can be used in many different ways. And
well, Sue was so good in second edition. And I have not really seen Sue much here in third edition, but you're saying that you definitely underrated Sue at first, but now you think Sue is pretty good?
Yep. Because, as Chris said, you have this past edition mentality. Right? Okay, this yep. guy used to do this. Now he doesn't. For example, it was the same with Dead Outlaws. Because, okay, Dead Outlaw, he must heal himself. He must ignore armor. Things like this. He doesn't do it anymore. Okay, I won't use it. But then, wait, he has new abilities. It's a different model. You don't look at the name of the model. We just look at the abilities and see, well, it's perfect. You can do something that nobody does. And this new mentality. You have to play a lot. You have to find these new combinations. You have to forget something, which makes you just it slows you.
Yeah. How about you, Nikolai? Nikolai, are there models that you think might need some attention, either that they're not good enough or maybe they're too good and Weird needs to take a look?
I really think Bishop gets enough attention. At least he got in competition with Chambers at the end of the day. but if you talk seriously, there are some models that need more attention here. In Neverborn, I think it's Serena Bowman. It's a universal model that I must get in any roster to win, because without her, winning is just like impossible. He has so much sustain, so much healing, so much condition removal, and so much damage for enemy, so much scam scoring that our models can't compete with her. Even some masters can't be so good as Serena Bowman.
Yeah, and if you're bringing Serena Bowman into every crew, that's a sign that maybe there's some balancing that needs to happen within the faction, right?
But I don't think this balancing must be made via nerfing Serena Bowman. I think they need more powerful model in our keywords so they can compete this level.
Right.
And that will be a much funner game to play than if we will nerf all to dust.
Yep.
Because nowadays, Neverborn just have not get any active healing, like from actions. Only Candy and Serena Bowman can do it. That's why these models are... Candy is always played in Pandora Keyword, and Serena Bowman is played like everywhere. So I guess this problem must need more attention,
It was very strange that Serena became versatile model, because she's a nightmare model, and she was from this Divergent Pass campaign, but neither Marlena, neither nor Ferdinand are versatile. So, okay, make the other two models versatile, maybe it will be interesting, or don't make any of them versatile.
Well, if the Serena Bowman becoming versatile was pretty late into beta that happened. And to your point, Dimitri, if they just by changing which models are versatile or not versatile, will have a huge impact on which models we see hired into these crews. Sure. So that's interesting to kind of see your perspective.
For example, there was Minako Rey, who became versatile after the beta, only during the release. Nobody saw it coming.
Yeah, that was a surprise.
Yes, just release changes. And sometimes nobody even saw it. Nobody knew about these changes. Like, oh, there is something new on this card. Very interesting.
Yeah, and that was a big change as well. So, guys, we're going to take one more break. And when we get back from this break, I want to talk to Chris, Dimitri, and Nikolai a little bit more about third edition in general. We're going to talk about how much time it's taking them to play games. We're going to talk to them about what it's like to try to grow the community over there in Russia and really get some insights on their views on third edition. So we'll be right back. Howdy, folks. Craig here. Now, if you love gadgets as much as we do, you're going to love the new Third Floor Wars gadget bundle from Schooner Labs. Branded with the logo of your favorite podcast, it comes with two measuring multi-tools, a compass stepper for those tight and important movements, along with a compact dashboard to track your turn, strat, and scheme scoring, along with your soul stones and pass tokens. It is the perfect bundle for anyone who plays Malifaux or just wants to look cool while doing it. The link is in the show notes. Check them out and help support your favorite gaming podcast. So now that we got kind of a feel of, you know, how the event went and, you know, I think some of the key differences we're seeing from what we normally hear on the podcast versus what we're hearing from our friends here in Russia, I do want to talk about Dead Man's Hand and hiring masters in competitive play. So, Chris, in the United Kingdom right now, for their events, they do not allow hiring masters. Hiring masters is banned in the UK. And we still haven't gotten the gaining grounds for third edition. In your opinion, do you think that the hiring of masters should or should not be allowed in competitive play?
To my mind, if you want to ban the master, then you need to roll back to the previous edition way of hiring the crew.
Where you don't declare masters?
Yes, that's for sure. Because when you have named your master, and then when you hire your crew, in some keywords you have definitely counter pickup.
Yep.
So, for example, when you play for the guild and you hear Dreamer, for example, you just pick the judge. No, not judge, but jury.
Jury, and, yep.
Yeah, and Dreamer has a lot of problems. One model breaks a game for your opponent, and for other choices, for you have not such powerful counter pick, and it makes game not too much competitive, which was in the second edition when you have your roster, and it's really hard to predict which roster will your opponent play, especially when you play this person first time.
Yeah. How about you, Dimitri? Do you think that hiring you agree with Chris that if they do ban second masters, that they're going to need kind of make some structural changes to accommodate it?
Sure, because, well, it's a rule and it's done for something. Of course, maybe the weird games wanted it to be just a fun rule, but there are even schemes that definitely say leader or master. So you can, for example, assassinate the leader and deliver a message to a master. And it's better for the opponent, not for the one who hired two masters. And for example,
that's true.
Okay, I have Victoria Chambers. It's master with rare two. How do I need to play them if I ban the second master? So it always depends on the concrete combination, the specific combination, because sometimes, okay, you can hire this 16 stone model with 3 OP, 3 AP, or you can hire 16 stones of models with many more APs. Like, okay, 4 minions for 4 stones, for example, and they will do much more than this one model. So it's not just a no-brain thing like, okay, I'll hire 5 masters and I win every game. No, you probably won't, because, like, okay, for example, we played the other day and I have 9 models. My opponent has, like, 5, and most of them are masters. And there are things like reckoning and hold their forces in the skin pool. So who has who will easily make the schemes? Which of the crews?
No, with that crew of 5 masters, it's much easier for you to get all 4 points for reckoning.
Yes, because you just need to kill one model every turn, and you can hold any model with any model.
So do you say it was easy for you to get 4 points in reckoning?
Well, technically, it will be in. It's an example that you can do this. Yes, in specific situations, it can be both forte and weakness, because it's not a no-brain thing. You can just
right, Dimitri. To your point, I think it's a very valid point to say that there are drawbacks to hiring masters, and it's not just the obvious cost, but there's some things built into the schemes that could make hiring a master a drawback. Nikolai, how about you? Do you have any opinions? Do you agree with these gentlemen?
I can say one thing. Adding another master is like spicing the game. You can counter your enemy with this master. You can build some all new strategies using another master here. You can found nice synergy between them if there are in some faction. And Neverborn are really good at it. We was recently played versus Dmitry. There I got on reckoning three masters and Selena Bowman, of course.
Of course. She's your fourth master, right?
It's almost like that. And it was really fun game. It was not feeling like unbalanced on something because it was my tactical decision to make my survivability make my models tougher to kill, and so I can get much points for wrecking and scoring our schemes. But at the end of the day, I don't win that much points. I get one or two deep with Dmitry. So it was not like a clear win for me. Relations is still strong. So I'm saying about that adding another master to roster is always an interesting opportunity to counter your opponent's style of play. And that's why I think it's important in the third edition.
No, I think that that's a probably the best argument I've heard for keeping second masters in competitive play. Another thing I've been wondering about too, Nikolai, is here in the West, some of us are having some struggles getting five rounds in 2 or 2.5 hours. In your competitive play that you're seeing right now, how many people are finishing games? Are you finishing games in 2 hours, or are you only getting to round three? What are you guys seeing, Nikolai?
Almost always on our tournaments, the reglement is 2.5 hours. And I almost always manage to finish the game by that time. For example, on the national tournament, we got 6 games. 5 of them was finished till round 5, and we scored points before the time ended. And only then I played versus Dmitry, there was only 4 full rounds because he is not a so fast player.
Now, is that true, Dmitry? Were you able, did you finish a lot of your games, or did most of your games only make it to turn 3 or turn 4?
Well, yes. Maybe I need to play much more, and well, I'm a deep thinker, so sometimes I try to think my move through.
Yeah.
And for example, yes, when we meet for the first time with a new player and with a new crew, sometimes it takes time to just ask each other about the crew, which model does what, and it takes time usually, yes. Especially if you are tired, for example, yeah, 6 rounds or etc.
Yeah. Chris, how about you? Are you finishing your games in tournaments, or are they only getting through turns 3 and 4?
No, it's about turn 4. Sometimes it's because it depends on how many models do you have on the table, to my mind. Yep. Because when you have from the start like 11, 12 models, it takes time to move them to make actually what they're supposed to do. And sometimes you have kind of hard to use combinations.
Yep.
So that's why you need a lot of things to remember, to play, to show to your opponent, and it takes time.
It does. No, I agree. It we're noticing, at least here in the U.S. I think in the U.K. they're getting a little bit closer to 5 rounds, pretty common in 2.5 hours. In the U.S., I think we're still struggling with it. And Chris, I think it's tied to what really all three of you guys said, which is familiarity, not only with your own crew but with your opponent's crew. So my hope is that here in the next several months, as we get more games under our belts, that we'll speed up as well. So Chris, I'd be very interested to see, as someone who played in second edition and the third edition, what do you think were kind of the best changes in the game? So what do you like about third the most as opposed to second edition?
First of all, it is that you can cheat the initiative.
Ah, yes.
It's nice. and it's not a model choice now, so you can just do it. Then actually I can say that it's just a different game now. To compare with the second edition, maybe using Soulstones. Mm-hmm. They became different, and sometimes it's better, sometimes not, because since they are not prevent, they are reduced damage, some models became more powerful. For instance, Leviticus or who else? Joss, maybe, who can make you reduce damage. And it's actually... You need to think about it. How you will play with such a models.
Irreducible damage is a big deal in third edition.
But no, there are not a lot of models with irreducible damage. There are some interesting crews in Ten Thunders who does it pretty well.
Yeah. Now, Chris, out of curiosity, on average, how many stones do you bring in a crew? Are you bringing 2 or 3 stones, 5 or 6 stones? How many extra stones do you leave left over?
It depends on master, since in Arcanist we can just dig stones.
Yeah, I hate those models so much.
No. Actually, I was talking about Colette.
Yeah, Soulstone Miners are on my list of models I hate.
Soulstone Miner is added to my roster as well, and I can have one stone in the beginning. And if opponent allows me and I have cards, I can do like 5 stones to the end of turn 1.
Yeah, no, so, it's pretty disgusting.
And 5 stones is enough.
That's a lot of stones. How about you, Nikolai? How many stones are you generally bringing into your cruise?
I generally bring about 4 to 6 stones. If I am not playing Wrecking. If I play Wrecking, I try to bring more stones and more masters, actually.
Right.
So my model can live longer. I think there is not so much about stones, but about the ways you can use them. So some things like if they are playing Mono Dreamer without any other masters, don't need much stones. 4 will be enough. Because almost all your models, except the Chompy Beats and Dreamer, don't use stones that time. You bring a lot of minions, you bring a lot of stuff. Yeah. So it depends on your choice of keyword.
Yep. No, I agree, Nikolai. And in your mind, you know, as Chris mentioned, the game is very different from what it used to be in second edition. Are there certain parts of third edition that you think make it better than second edition?
What rating are these podcasts, I guess?
They can be rated R, Nikolai.
There is much less wanking in the corner.
Yeah.
So, and that's make the game really fun. In the second edition, there were a lot of tactics. The opponent can stay in corner, get a hand of cards and go to smash your face, or get a lot of summoning like the Dreamer does. Doing that, they are make non-interactive actions. There are much more interaction in third edition, and almost any action can find its answer. And that's one of the reasons, because the stitched together are so bad and the players are burning on because you can't counteract their tactical action. You just flip a card. You cannot.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Nikolai, and I love how much action happens on turn 1, because that wasn't true in second edition. And to your point, there was a lot of crews that spent their first 2 or really almost 3 turns holed up in a corner and just doing their own thing. You can't do that anymore in third edition. So I agree completely with that and how that breaks down. Last question, one of the questions I also was wondering is about how things are growing Dimitri, are you seeing the game grow? And if not, what are the challenges preventing it from growing in Russia?
Well, there is a new edition, and some players left during this hiatus, and new players don't come before the release because there are no boxes yet. They want to wait until the new toys come into town, and only then they will buy them.
Yeah.
And the problem is that we had a tragedy with our local distributor, and we're not sure whether there is still one in Russia, and we don't know how it will be distributed here from now on.
So if anybody from Weird is listening, we need to somehow get some more distributors servicing Russia, it sounds like.
Yeah. And also there were rumors about Russian localization. In fact, Weird said that there will be one. And I personally asked them about it, that they have these plans about Russian localization.
Yeah.
It will be very good because actually I took part in the Russian localization for second edition here in Russia. And unfortunately, it wasn't that successful here due to this tragedy with our distributor. And I hope that with new edition and maybe with new local management, if there will be one, we will make Mighty Four great again here in Russia.
Well, it's really hard to grow a game if you don't have product on the shelf, or if it's a challenge to get product. So I do hope that soon that becomes less of a challenge, and you guys can really build up that community even more.
As Nikolai said, for example, okay, if you live in Moscow or St. Petersburg, it's easier to have some players because it's a big city. There is always someone playing any game.
Yeah.
Any game you like. But if you live in another city, which is smaller, okay, maybe you are the only Mighty Four player there. Maybe you have to go to just two cities away to find an opponent. It's quite a challenge, a crusade, but okay, it's not that good. So I hope it's difficult to change because, okay, it's problem of localization of small communities and smaller towns.
Yeah, I understand. Well, gentlemen, I really appreciate you guys coming on the show and listening and being guests on the show. It took a little bit of arranging as far as taking care of the time zones, but I can speak for myself, and I think the listeners will agree with me that it was really neat to kind of get some very unique perspectives and some good arguments for things that we haven't heard a lot on this podcast. So guys, I hope we stay in touch, and hopefully we'll have some more Russians on in the future.
Okay.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
All right. And thanks, everybody, for listening.
Be sure to check out our shop on thirdfloorwars.com for the latest gaming apparel and gear. While you're there, check out how the USFO Tour is shaping up. How does your conference compare to the others in the United States? Where do you rank nationally? Get those models built, painted, and on the table so we can see you at the US Masters Invitational in October of 2020. Also, rate and write a review on this podcast for us. It really helps us find people almost as cool as you are. Thanks for listening. Howdy, friend. Craig here. Is this episode making you realize you need to buy some models? Gadzooks Gaming is my favorite online retailer because of their large selection, killer prices, and great customer service. Don't you hate buying an entire crew box when you only need one model? Gadzooks sells crew box models individually and saves you a ton of money. They even have free shipping to the U.S. and Canada if you spend $100 or more. Swing by GadzooksGaming.com and make sure you tell them Craig from the Third Floor sent you. All the details are in the show notes.